Okay, everyone hear me? We're all good?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to start with the first Chakira that appears actually a little before this page. I just wanted to put everything on one page. The Chakira is actually as an interesting raya from something in this week's Parsha. And this is something not derived from the Torah. There's no pasuk in the Torah that teaches this halacha I'm about to mention to you. It's derived from a pasuk in Yechezkel. The Gemara asks, how can Yechezkel be mechadesh this rule? Because after the Torah, it's not the job of Nevi'im to mechadesh dinim. The role of the Nevi'im and the Rabbanon is to protect the Torah, not to make new mitzvahs. So the Gemara says that actually Yechezkel is the Navi that does this quite a bit. Is that whenever the Gemara derives something from Yechezkel, like I'm about to tell you, it is considered halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, and we don't detract from it just because a Navi wrote about it. All right? It's, you know, there are lots of halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai that don't have any remez in the Torah. Right? A lot of hilchos shechita, hilchos tefillin, you know, a lot of things are we call halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. You know, Nisuch HaMayim, Esimitios, you know, there's a lot, you know, Arava. And sometimes in some of these things, there's an opinion in the Talmud that these things are Asmachta or Minog Nevi'im or something like that. But all right, but you get the picture. The day Moshe died, the job of all Nevi'im, Zakenim, and Rabbanim from then on would be to put a fence around the Torah, to protect the Torah, but not to make new dinim. So here is the new din that emerges from Yechezkel. The din is that while the Torah says that a male who is not circumcised may not eat the Korban Pesach, that we know. But Yechezkel adds another din, that a male who is not circumcised may not eat Truma if he's a Kohen. Okay, that's a very pasuk in Yechezkel. That an Orel Kohen may not eat truma. And there's a whole parak in Maseches Yevamos. It's in Yevamos as a tangent to a similar inyan, but there's a parak in Yevamos called Parak HaOrel, right? Most of the laws of circumcision in the Talmud is in the 19th parak in Maseches Shabbos called Parak Rabbi Eliezer Demila. But there's a beautiful parak, the 7th parak in Maseches Yevamos, that teaches this din of a Kohen Orel may not eat Truma. So we consider this din to be Halacha L'moshe mi-Sinai, and it's not, we don't, just because Yechezkel wrote it, doesn't detract from it. So the Gemara discusses this inyan, and the Gemara is very makbid, and then it asks this question. Of course, not when it comes to the food of a drink or wine of Truma. This is not a question, obviously. But a five-day-old baby boy who is the son of a Kohen, may he be smeared with the oil of Truma? Right? He's obviously not going to eat Truma at this young, tender age. But can a five-day-old Kohen male be smeared sicha with truma oil? Can we smear it on his legs or last week we had tzaras b'mila on a young child, but now we're asking a different question. The family has this Kohanic family; they have plenty of olive oil, and they want to rub it on this boy's foot or something, right? So can they rub it on it? And if you think that that's okay, what about a four-month-old Kohanic male who does not have a bris yet because he's waiting for him to be healthier so that he can get his bris later? Or let's press the question: what about a 20-year-old Kohen or a non-Kohen whose brothers are hemophiliacs? And he's in the halacha is he's not allowed to have a bris, right? He's not allowed to have a bris. The mitzvah is for him to not have a bris. So can he eat the Korban Pesach? Can he? Do we consider him to? If the halacha says you have to be an orel, does that make him gemalt? Right. So last week we saw an amazing svara from the Minchas Osher. I don't know if you had a chance to see it. It's in this week's parsha. The Minchas Osher, who understands the Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah, Daf Chav Zayin, where the Gemara there talks about there's only two people to possibly do a circumcision in the town, a Jewish woman and a Gentile doctor, a Gentile surgeon or just a Gentile. Should we prefer the male to do the circumcision who's not Jewish or the woman who's Jewish? Of course, the halacha sides with the woman. There's even a story in the Torah about a woman doing a bris milah in the beginning of Shmos. Amazingly, the Talmud has an opinion that says that it's better if the Gentile does it. And they ask him, what about Tzipora? And he answers, look, you'll see it, it's in the Gemara, Daf Chav Zayin. He answers, there's nothing in that story that indicates that she actually did it herself. Maybe she had someone else do it. That's very strange. She did it right there on the spur of the moment, on the spot. I can't imagine that she went out looking for a male to do it. And it's before Matan Torah. I don't see what the need is here. But all right. But anyway, Ayin Shom, that when it says that she did the Mila, it doesn't necessarily mean that she did it, but she had it done. All right, that kind of verbs do appear in the Torah. The chosav lo sefer krisus doesn't mean that the husband has to write the get. The osa lo ksonis pasim doesn't mean that Yaakov made it himself. It means that he had it made for Yosef, probably. Anyway, the lemaisa, I would like to just bring a raya to answer at least one of these questions from an agadita in this week's parsha. It says in Perek Yud Zayin that when God told Avraham that he would be a great nation, he's going to have a child with Sarah, and he's changing his name. Avraham's first reaction was to fall on his face. Right? This is actually the real pshuto, the why God rebuked Sarah for laughing, Vayitzchak Sarah, but God did not rebuke Avraham for Vayitzchak Avraham, right? Is that the context of Avram falling on his face means that Avram is laughing in intense joy. So much so that he fell on his face. Right? In fact, the Targum Onkelos to when Avraham laughed, Vayitzchak is Vachagi, which means to joyfully laugh. If you look at the Targum Onkelos when Sarah laughs, ring a bell, anybody? Targum Onkelos, when Sarah laughs, is v'chachias, which means like tongue-in-cheek. It's she mocked, like she would, oh, yeah, come on. I can't have a baby. But Avram, v'nafayipola panav, implies, a more intense, real passionate laughing. Be it as it may, the Talmud considered it to be one of the 18 cardinal psukim in the Tanakh. Does this ring a bell? That Aaron, does it ring a bell to you?
The falling on the face
part? No. That the rabbis was so stymied by the inconsistency that God rebukes Sarah for Bat Yitzchak, but says nothing to Avram for Bat Yitzchak. This is one of the 18 places that the Gemara in Megillah Daf Tes says that the rabbis changed the Torah. For the Greek, for Talmi's translation that ended up being the Septuagint. They changed Vatitzchak Sarah Bekirba to Vatitzchak Sarah Bekroveha. The difference is that at least Avram laughed to himself. Sarah laughed to her relatives. Uh-huh. Right? Even though Bekirba, the pshat is, she laughed to herself, for goodness sakes. Anyway, so it shows that the rabbis were stymied by this. Why did God only express some consternation to Sarah, but not to Avram? Okay, be that as it may, let me get you to this agadita now, and we'll get to business.
Isn't it that the falling on the face suggests that Avraham had like total submission to God's will and understand? I mean, there was never the fact that he would fall on his face means that he would never question God's ability to do it. So whatever laughing he is has to be some other kind of laughing.
Beautiful.
Whereas Sarah, because she's, in other words, the falling on the face is an expression of I acknowledge your total almighty power.
Right, right. And there's not even a smidgen of doubt with all that I've been through.
It would be inconsistent with the kind of laughing that would doubt that power.
Beautiful. Okay, very good. Beautiful. So, but here is, however, a very different turn that's taken in Midrash Rabbah to explain why Avram fell on his face. The answer is the same reason why Bilam keeps falling on his face. Because when God gave him this prophecy, because he was an Orel, he could not accept. This is one of the most significant prophecies he has gotten so far. The name change, the whole bit with Sarah, the Pris, the covenant now that goes seems to go beyond the covenant back in chapter 15, known as Gris Ben Absarim. So here, Avraham falls on his face because of his Orla. That if an Orel like Bilam receives a prophecy and he's not protected by the circumcision, then he is going to run into this problem staying on his feet. So the obvious question is, wait a second, Avram had many prophecies so far. Why didn't he fall on his face? He does actually fall on his face back in chapter 15, Emach Hashecha or something, right? So, but why didn't he fall on his face when Hashem told him back in chapter 12, 13, 14, you know, all those chapters Hashem was speaking to Avraham? Why didn't he fall on his face then? So the answer is obvious. Because Avraham wasn't an Orel in chapter 14. He wasn't an Orel in chapter 15. He wasn't an Orel in chapter 16. He's only an Orel from the time Hashem tells him, you got to give yourself a bris. Right? Until you do, you're an Orel. Okay? Therefore, a baby boy at 5 days old is not an Orel. So there's enough Kamina here. Because if this is true, then on the day of a baby boy's bris, he's an Orel. This is why Zrivs and Makdimi, we tend to do bris in very early. I don't want to have an Orel in my house, right? So on the eighth day, if he's a Kohanic baby, he should not have the oil of Truma smeared on him that morning of his bris. You get it? Once the bris takes place, then you can put oil on him.
Right.
Right? Because now he's no longer an Orel. So what about a baby that's 4 months old, that's waiting for, he's hypospadias or he has some other problem and he's waiting for the bris to take place? So the poskim say that he's also not an Orel. The halacha says he's not supposed to have a bris. Okay, but at what point does this negate the Korban Pesach rule? If a father has a 2-year-old Orel in his house, right, the father can't eat Korban Pesach. If the 2-year-old stays in his Orel status, shelo al pi halacha. Right, the Gemara concludes that a 20-year-old hemophiliac who never had a bris, I'm sorry, may not eat the Korban Pesach. Of course, he's not punished for not doing so. He may not eat the Korban Pesach, but he does not invalidate the household. Remember, it says kol orel lo yuzchal. If anyone is an orel in the household, even amongst the avodim, the household is lacking as a result. We learned from Parshas Bo. Okay. Adkan, this question, it's an interesting raya from this Agadita between Avraham and Bilam. Now, if everybody can turn, please, to the page where we're starting. It starts from Yud Gimel. Okay, where it says the Yud Gimel towards the top of the page. I'm sorry, it's a pretty small print here. Okay, and the question here is on the din of Hatofas Dambris. Okay, there are some cases where we can't do a bris because, I'll give three quick cases. One, the child is born with no foreskin whatsoever. I've seen it once. It's amazing. It looks like he's born looking like he already had a bris. Two, the boy had a bris on day 5 or day 7. Why? Because, I don't know. Because the parents made a mistake? I don't know. The child was born Ben Ashmashos on a Tuesday, and they did the bris on the following Tuesday, but then it was clarified that the child was actually born on Wednesday. So the child had his bris on Tuesday. There's no more foreskin to take off. What are we going to do? All right? The third, perhaps most common case, because those first two cases are pretty uncommon, or actually not so uncommon. I've had some cases in my years of an irreligious family who they were interested in the child having a bris, but they just let the surgeon do it and before they left the hospital. Right? It was a non-Jewish surgeon or whatever. They just wanted the boy to, you know, his father had a bris from his father, so he wanted the boy to be like the father. So they got a bris in the hospital before the boy came home with general anesthesia, and now he looks like any other circumcised boy. So that's another case. The most common case that I'm associated with is a convert. It happens all the time. Most conversions I've done for males, I'd say it's about 20% males, but most converts seem to be women, but just in our experience. But the males are almost always in this country circumcised. I had a few, we're not. Great nisayon on their part, you can imagine, all right? But under general anesthesia, they don't feel it. But I'm sorry, under even local anesthesia, they don't feel it. But the
until they wake up.
Yeah.
I went to high school with a kid who was one of the Jews who came over from Russia, and he had not had a bris. He was uncircumcised, and I think I was in ninth grade. He was in 10th grade. And
how do you know that?
Huh?
How do you know that?
Because they made a big deal about it at the yeshiva. He went into the hospital at 14 and he had a bris.
Wow.
And we had like a little celebration in the school.
Right. By the way, Rabbi, in the first case that you mentioned, I think you still have a bris because you prick it. You know, that's what you're supposed to do even in that
Yes. We're going to do that now. I'll tell you that now. And in fact, the technology today is profound. It's amazing. The technology has created this sharp, as you can't believe how sharp it is, this sharp, thin little device where you just press the button and it's so sharp, but so thin. It's amazing how thin they've made this device. It has to draw blood. That's how tough it's done. So it's so thin that the device is not even felt. Mamish not felt.
And it draw like just even a mashahu is enough.
That's it. Okay. All right. So here's the question that the Minchas Chinuch asks. First of all, before I actually read the question inside, I want to pursue a line of thought that you're going to see very often in the Minchas Chinuch, and I want to use a few examples by way of bringing home our point. And the point by Bris Mila is going to be, what's the mitzvah for this boy? Is that the mitzvah that he should be without a foreskin? Or I guess you can probably guess the answer to this question. Is the mitzvah that he should just be without a foreskin, or that there should be a positive act of removal of the foreskin? The most obvious nafkamina would be a boy who's born with no foreskin at all. Okay, so he's born, he's a lucky kid. He's born without the need for this mitzvah.
Didn't they say Moshe Rabbeinu was born without it?
There is a Agadah that Yaakov was born without a foreskin. I'm not familiar with that Moshe was born without a foreskin. I'm not familiar with that.
As a matter of fact, Moshe, didn't they have the bris? There was I know his kids that had to have a bris when she gave the kids a bris.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about that, yeah. So Moshe, I think he was put in that basket at the age of 3 months old. I'm not familiar with a drash. Yaakov Ishtam Yoshev Olim, there's a drash that Yaakov was born not needing a bris. Okay, Lamaisa, so the question I think everyone can know now is, no, the mitzvah is not just to be unforeskin, you know, to be without a foreskin. The mitzvah is to actually do a maisa of Mila, so that if the boy is born without a foreskin, you've got to do something. And if the boy had the foreskin removed at the age of anything before day 8, there has to be a positive act of Dam Bris. Mila, question.
Yeah, Midrash Tanhuma says there were 7 born uncircumcised. Adam, Seth, Noah, Yaakov, Yosef, Moshe, and Yov.
Okay.
I actually have... Now that you mention it, I've heard that.
Yeah, it's not a mainstream position. And when you see that, it doesn't mean that that is like Chazal's position. It is a position.
There's another one that includes him, Avot de Rabbi Natan.
Yeah. So it's an out of the way position.
But there's in Gemara also in Sota 12a. And then Shemot Rabba.
Yes, Batireu Kitovu.
Yeah.
That when Paro's daughter saw that, and when the mother saw Batireu Kitov, the Gemara in Sota gives four or five different interpretations of what it means that he was good. One of them being that he was born circumcised. So yes, I get this, but these again are they're I'd say minority opinions. There are some in Chazal. There's you'll find opinions here, but yes, certainly legitimate opinions, no doubt. So,
If what you're saying that it's got to be an act of mila, so does the act need kavana? No, as we generally pass the mitzvah saying tzrichas kavana, right? But there are exceptions, right? Tefillah, at least the beginning of Shemoneh Esrei, etc. Is this an exception rule then? Because you need the act of mila.
Yes. I think that if a Jewish surgeon was given five babies to circumcise and he thought he was circumcising a Gentile, and it turns out that the boy in front of him was actually a Jewish boy and it was his eighth day, that would be a perfectly kosher bris. Mm-hmm. Right? As long as he did a kriya afterwards. You know, there's right. Something called kriya, which is pushing over until the...
The very common situation, though, where a kid has a circumcision performed by a surgeon in a hospital, regular Gentile surgeon, that absolutely needs a hatafas dam bris at some point.
Correct.
Got it.
Yes.
Okay.
Not an uncommon thing. I've had it quite a few times in my office. We took care of it. Locked the door, you know.
Right.
And if it's a part of a conversion, it needs actually a Beis Din.
Okay.
Chava, did you have a question?
No, but it doesn't matter whether it was done before the eighth day.
Yeah, preferably it should be on the eighth day, but that's the point. Doing it on the eighth day is like making this boy born without a foreskin. He still needs something to be done.
I know of a case, there was a baby that died at 31 days, and they had to give a bris to the baby in order to bury him.
So I wouldn't tell you in order to bury him. Chas v'shalom.
In Jewish cemeteries, so I don't know. That's what they were told.
That's right. I've been involved with quite a few cases like this. Let me tell you that. This is what's done. Mistama, this poor baby was sick and didn't have a bris because the baby wasn't well enough to have a bris and never got better. I've had cases where the baby is born and lived 3 minutes. We had a case with twins. The other boy survived, but Nebuch had a lot of troubles. That boy is about 7 or 8 now, but his twin brother passed away at 3 minutes old. And I remember at Plaza getting we actually got a mole to do it, to give this, the baby had died already by the time.
Is that a minhag or a halacha that you can't be buried without a mila?
So I chas v'shalom, not in order to bury, we did bury the child. We got a small box and we buried the child in the shul grounds. Without the parents and just very quickly. And, but a mole came in because this baby lived, had a neshama for a few minutes. And we feel that the neshama is, something that continues to exist in some kind of a more ruchnius existence beyond the connection of the soul to a body. And therefore, we wanted the body to be circumcised. I'm not familiar with a policy. I know our shul does not have that policy, that we do that in order to allow the baby to be buried in a Jewish cemetery. I'm not familiar with such a policy.
Why, if it's 3 minutes old, does it need a bris? I thought if it doesn't make it to 8 days, why would it get a bris?
No, just in the Konami. You're right. He never had a chiyuv in life to have a bris. But we want the there's something about the body connected to a neshama that it was very comforting to the family that we did this. Okay. So I'm sorry, Ravain, did you have a question?
Maybe. No, let me go back. If the mitzvah is an action, not having the bris done to you, but an action, who's doing the action?
You're not coming in so clearly.
Can you hear me better now?
Oh, yes, totally, yes.
So if the mitzvah is an action, and it's an action, someone doing something rather than someone being done to.
Correct.
So who's the actor in the case where the baby's no longer alive?
Well, the moel is connecting to a physical thing that had an neshama in it at one time. So if the baby never was alive, the baby died inside its mother, Nebuch. I don't believe the minhag is to give that child a bris. If the baby had breathed for a few minutes, that means there was an neshama in that baby, and therefore the body deserves to have go to the next world looking like it had a bris.
I actually know a case where it was born dead, and they gave a bris to the baby.
And even though it never yeah. maybe it lived for a few seconds, even, you know, that it was born, it was dead.
I think it was born. It was never, as far as I know, okay. It was never. But some people would claim if it's living in the womb, you know, that's like living. Maybe also.
Could be. However, I want to move further on Ruvain's point. Is that shechita on an animal is like mila. The mitzvah is not that the animal's neck should be cut. The food pipe and the windpipe should be cut according to specification. No. The mitzvah is for that to be done by a bar zvicha. And a Jew at that. Someone who is chayav to be shechted meat. As opposed to, let's say, chametz on Pesach. The mitzvah is not necessarily to rid the house, for you to rid the house of chametz. The act of ridding the house of chametz. No. The mitzvah is to be rid of chametz. If you didn't bring any chametz in, then you don't have a mitzvah of tashbisu that year, right? Okay, so therefore, if like I think I said this last time, if you can train a monkey, it's called masekof. That's why the Gemara calls it that. Masekof. You can train a monkey to clean for Pesach. You can do it, right? You can train a monkey to put up a parapet around your roof. So you can do it. You can have that done. You can have a machine do it.
Roomba, right?
Yeah.
Thanks, God.
So, and remember when America started, it was invented in America. They invented the machine to make matzahs. So the Gemara insists that matzahs have to be l'shem mitzvahs matzahs Pesach. So the question was the person who presses the button on the machine, does that qualify? Obviously, the answer by now is yes. And there are still others who are very much mahader, only to have hand matzahs, because only a hand matzah, according to their opinion, can qualify as a kavanah. Okay, please turn with me to this on the first column. I underlined it right under, shortly under the Yud Gimel, right, the next paragraph after the Yud Gimel. He'd say, "V'hineh ha-tofastam bris imhumin ha-torah or rak midrabanan." So this requirement of going beyond the actual act of some kind of mitzius, that this boy doesn't have an orla, and that what got him to that state was something missing, something was wrong. He wasn't Jewish when it happened. It was from the fifth day of life when it happened. He was born without it. So the requirement for a tofas dam bris, where does that come from? You have a pasuk for me? Anyone know why we have to do this? Where does it come from? So he says, "Midivrei Tosfos Shabbos Kuflam et Hayamid Aleph," which he's about to discuss. "Di Ramaskul Nechleku Nira Duhumin HaTorah Bayin Shem Barosh Osei B'Shem Rav Shimon the Kosav, the Iamrina, the Koton Animal, Toches, Tzorcha, Toches, Tambris, Havile, Lidchos, Shabbos. So the Nafkamina is, if we need this Hatofas Dambris, okay, for a Gentile, I can't, it doesn't make sense that we're going to convert this Gentile on the Shabbos. It's just not Shayach. There's plenty of this Feldmanish came days of the week to do a conversion. We have to do it on Shabbos. But there is one, and there's one question that's very Shayach, is if that this boy had for some reason his bris on day five, and then all of a sudden the parent, you mean I'm not supposed to do a bris at the hospital with a surgeon? Yeah, come on. Don't you, if you want the boy not to have to fix this, then you should do something on day 80. What do I have to do? It's okay. It's called a tofas dambris. I don't know. Maybe the parents aren't going to say, no, he has a wound. I'm not going to let anybody go in there again with something. He's wearing bandages now.
Or he's born nemal.
Or he's born nemal, of course. The much more obvious case. He's born nemal. Can we do the bris on day 8? Can all those people that Camellia mentioned, can they have their bris on day 8? Which is not going to be a whole bris because there's nothing to bris. But can they do the Hatofas Dam bris, that little tiny, can they do that on Shabbos? What's the advantage of doing it on Shabbos? Because that's his bris, poor guy, you know? He wants a bris, the family wants a bris on Shabbos.
And is there a day 8 requirement for Hatofas Dam bris?
Correct. So, and if there is, can we do it on Shabbos?
It's Doka Shabbos.
Right. So he says. So the Chinuch says.
So if it's Derabbanan, though, it wouldn't be Doka Shabbos. That's
sure not.
That's the implication.
You're right. V'shach siman reish simach beis nilchas milan the shulchan aruch sikun beis docha dvarav. Right, and the shach is docha the Tosfos and the Rosh, who both hold that it is Docha Shabbos. The Shach disagrees. Da Tofas Dam Bris ain't a Docha Shabbos. He thinks that we should not have to do the Atofa. We don't do the Atofa on Shabbos. Wait till after Shabbos. There's nothing in the Torah that describes this Atofa, and therefore I'm calling it a Drabanan. Uvishag Yisari Simin Nundalet Docha Divrei Shach. Shag Yisari disagrees. And he says that the Tofas Dam Bris, as long as we have the din that we have to correct this, so that will beg the question later. We're going to have this question a few weeks from now. What happens if a boy is born without an orla, and he never had the correction of Hatofas Dam Bris? Can he eat the Korban Pesach? If he dies that way, without ever having Hatofas Dam Bris, is he considered an Orel? So that's the question the Shag Yisari discusses. It is, no, Chas v'Sholom, of course not. He's not an Orel. He doesn't look like an Orel, and he's not an Orel. But he never did anything, right? So this is the debate over what's the efficacy. What does this Hatofa create? Does it take a man from an Orel to be a Gemal? Or is it just like a small corrective? So anyway, the chinuch sides with al kol panim nira dehumin haTorah la osam asovrim malu shalok yilchasan tzricha matofa, that those who feel that all these cases, the convert who was circumcised perfectly when before his conversion, the boy who was born on with without a foreskin, the boy who had his circumcision on day 7. Now, all of this is tied into another opinion, says the Chinuch later. There is something when Yehoshua took Bnei Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael, it's the Haftorah of the first day of Pesach. It says that he gemalt all the Jews a second time. So the Gemara says, what? What's the need to gemalt them a second time? So it sounds like our sugya here, right?
Right, so they didn't have a bris in the desert. Because it was too dangerous or something.
Right. So they didn't have a bris, but what do you mean the second time? So the Gemara said that in the desert it was too dangerous. Only one tribe, Rashi says at the end of the Torah, circumcised their boys, because it says, Ki shamru imrasecha ubrischa yintzoru, right? Aaron's ancestors, all of Shevet Levi in the desert. So only Shevet Levi was gemalt in the desert, but the other tribes were not, because it was too dangerous. Same reason why Moshe didn't gemal his son on the journey in the desert. But the Gemara, however, in the Sefer Shabbos, darshins the Mila, the second Mila, to refer to what's called Priya. Priya. Priya was not given to Avraham. Priya was given to Yoshua, according to this Mahalach. And that in all these cases, obviously a boy who was born without a foreskin did not have a Priya. He's not in need of a Mila, but he didn't have a Priya. Priya means lefroa ha'or, to parea the skin down. So this boy who was gemalt on day seven, surely by the surgeon doesn't know from Priya. He may know from circumcision, but he doesn't know from Priya. The Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel, says it's like a din in zek keli va'anvehu. Imagine that. Can you believe this? The Gemara gives a few examples of zek keli va'anvehu. Wear a beautiful talis, have a beautiful lulav and esrog, and it says, and do a beautiful bris milah. Right? I mean, you have to be proud of your surgery. It's plastic surgery, right? I think you need a surgeon license to be a moa, right? So the chinuch concludes, and he says it's a function of what the Gemara in Yevamos says about this boy born without an orla, and does that disqualify him from eating the Korban Pesach? Right? Is he called an Orel later in life? So Ayin Yevamos Taf Ayin Aleph Amad Aleph. The Rabbi Kiva Goliat Torah Benolad Mol She'ino Ochel HaPesach T'Tzorich Lav Tif Damris. It's a machlokes Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Kiva holds that if you have a boy that needs a Hatofas Damris, that's a game breaker for Korban Pesach. So if it's a game breaker for Korban Pesach, then the Minchas Chinuch sides with those poskim like the Shagis Aryeh that it's Docha Shabbos. So that's the answer to our question. Lemaisa, halacha lemaisa, a boy born without a foreskin is going to have something done on his eighth day, and they'll even do it on Shabbos. The Moel is going to be drawing a lot less blood.
Have you ever seen that, Rabbi? Have you seen a Hatafas Dambris on Shabbos?
No. In fact, I've never seen a Hatafas Dambris at all on the eighth day.
Okay.
But I have seen quite a few Hatafas Dambris.
If it's not on the eighth day, you definitely are not Docha Shabbos for it?
Yeah, that's generally the position today.
Okay.
You ever hear that there's like in Hechal Rashi, it says that Rashi was named Shlomo after Shlomo HaMelech. Right? There's no Rabbi Shlomo in the whole Talmud, no Medrash. There's no Shlomo. There's no Shlomo Grav, Shlomo Gaon. There's no Shlomo in the Rebbe. Rashi is the first Shlomo from it seems from Shlomo HaMelech, because there's not even another Shlomo in Tanakh. In Hechal Rashi, it's his book about all kinds of everything Rashi, it says that his father named him at his bris after a pasuk in that week's Haftorah that said that Shlomo was the wisest person who ever lived. And that is indeed the last pasuk of the Haftorah of Parshas Truma, when it's not one of the four Parshios or something. So it must be that Rashi's birthday was Shabbos Parshas Mishpatim, because the only way you would have Haftorah of Parshas Truma is Shabbos, and the only way you could have a bris on Shabbos is if Rashi was born on Shabbos. So we know Rashi's Yortzeit is Chof Tes Tammuz, and now we also know his birthday was in the year 1040, the Shabbos of Parshas Mishpatim. Okay, so it's usually somewhere around Rosh Chodesh Adar. Okay, so we paskin halacha like Rabbi Akiva that he's machmir to consider someone who, for whatever reason, doesn't need, is born without the bris, or we've got a bris on day five, or he converted and was circumcised, etc., etc. He said, the Rabbi Kiva calls this person an Orel Gomor. Family is disqualified from Korban Pesach because of him. All right. So as such, he says that Tavadam is Tav Torah Hatavas Dambris. Nira Gam came to Hud Min Torah. Okay. The Efshar the Rabbi Akiva Sober Kerav Yosef the Vada Orla Kvushawi. Oh, a new chiddush. Panim Chadashos Baul Lakan is that there's no such thing as a boy born not without an orla. No such thing. I'll let the biologists. I don't know.
An orla? So what's an orla kavusha?
Orla kavusha means that the orla was kavush, means it was pressed in. There is something there. It's just it's a tiny piece thread of skin. It's a tiny. It's like an onion skin. But something does need to be removed. That's a big chiddush. That means that there's what this means according to Rav Yosef is that there's something that actually needs to be removed. You have to be very careful here. You know, you ever see the clamps?
Yeah.
Because you want to make sure that all you cut is skin. As for Shalom, you don't want to cut flesh, right? There's a thick layer of skin there that can be cut. But if you chas v'sholem cut flesh, you can mutilate this poor child. All right. So the clamp assures that the flesh wouldn't fit in the clamp. Only skin can fit in the clamp. All right. It does hurt the child. You see, that's where the child starts screaming. But the clamp is there for mamish seconds, and then the clamp pretty much. Look, I've never asked an eight day old boy what it felt like. But the doctors, the surgeons say that the clamp acts actually as an anesthetic for the actual cut. Then all you have to do is cut the knife according to the smooth clamp, and then you know you're not cutting flesh; you're just cutting skin.
Well, if you want to try a second time, we can find out.
Yeah, maybe ask him. Yeah, okay. All right. No, there is something, if you remember in the Gemara, called Tzitzin Hama'akvin, right? That if he didn't cut the skin properly, he has to go back and, it's Ma'akev in the bris.
Right.
And if it's Shabbos, sometimes, you know, you can go back, even on Shabbos, sometimes you have to wait until afterwards. It can be very painful.
No one attempts to none of the opinions that say that Hatavas Dambris is Doraisa attempt to actually find a, there's no specific source other than just the mitzvah of milah, right? This is just an interpretation of the mitzvah of milah. No one says Omar lach b'demayin chayi or something.
Yeah, I was about to, you just took the word out of my mouth. I was about to, because there are some psukim in the Neviim that talk about some kind of connection to God that draws blood. Some of it is from the standpoint of we're ready to makadish, our very bodies for you. But some of them are darshaned or quite explicit that it mentions the word bris, which is taken to refer to bris milah, and that mimon of shach, however you look at it, some blood must be drawn.
Right.
So that would be a richta garaya. But here comes Rav Yosef to say, and this is brought down by the chinuch to fortify the opinion of Rabbi Akiva in the Gemara in Yevamos. And the position of the Shagis Aryeh, he says, because it is divide or la kavusha, it's a gemar Shabbos. He can perform a Shabbos sham. Im kain havilei oril. So then, yeah, a boy born looking like he doesn't need a bris is a richtiga oril. Okay. Avol benechtecha arlaso kigon toch smano o al yedei apsulim efshar shehu rak derabana. But I'm willing to admit that if a surgeon did it on day three, or a Gentile who was circumcised in his youth and is an infant, and then he wanted to convert, so maybe in those cases, I'm willing to admit that might not be subsumed by Rabbi Akiva, because that person did have a Maisa Bris. Following? And if we understand what Yehoshua, the Sefer Yehoshua did, that there's more to it, to the Mila, there's a Chiddush called Priya, so that Priya must be done also. But once an adult is circumcised, there's no more room for Priya, I assure you. There's no Chas V'Shalom, that'd be extremely painful. But all that needs to be done for an adult is like I said, on top of numbers. Okay, I'm not going to get into the gory details of to what extent the Hatafas Dambris must be done, but suffice it to say that there are different opinions of where to do that Hatafas Dambris. Okay? And some are makbid to do it, to cover, literally cover all the bases, so or at least two of the bases. So, let's leave it at that. Okay,
What were the controversial Netzitza?
I'm sorry, say this again.
What's the controversial system of some people do metzitza?
So that is the Gemara says that metzitza has to draw out the blood. And that if we don't draw out the blood, there's a sakana. That's in the Gemara. No one has any debate about that.
The path.
It's just that in the Middle Ages, there came to be, but even though it's not found in the Gemara, that's the key. Not even before that, the Gaonim started to do what's called the Metzitza Bepeh, to actually draw it out with a sucking motion Bepeh, like with a straw. So others said, especially now that they know this, so you know there were some high profile cases. But others say that all right, I'll draw it out with a tube, with a straw, with something that you know, and you can see the tube. They do it very quickly. And there's blood in the whole tube. It draws out the blood. It's sort of like you know, when you get a wound, you want it to bleed a little bit, right? To get the blood bleeding through the skin is going to push out some bad stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the Gemara says. The controversy that you're referring to is whether we do it pepeh or not directly, right? When Gentiles hear about this, they say this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. And I know there's some real, like Rabbi Tendler and others who are very much makbid that it should not be done the pet today anymore.
There's like cases of the main like disease that's associated with this is herpes, right? Right.
Yeah.
Well, especially today with COVID, you don't want to do it.
Of course. Okay.
Is it all right, the bris is, you know, does every bris have some form of metzitza, or is that itself not a universally accepted practice?
Yes, every bris has some form of metzitza. Not a tofas dam bris, though, because that's just right. all we have to do is just see a tiny, tiny.
But it's the question whether you do it in. Do they draw it out just by pressing it ever, or does everyone do it either with a straw or directly, the directly being the controversial and disfavored practice, but everybody.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because with COVID, I can understand that. So early on, this was an issue that the key point of the Gemara is that metzitza means drawing out some more blood. So if you can do that, you know, wearing a glove, the Moles are always wearing gloves anyway, and you just squeeze the area of the blood so that it draws out, then you're not, you know, today, since COVID, no one is doing it even with a tube. The Moel is wearing an N95 mask when he does a bris now.
Right.
But he does have to do something that qualifies as the metzitza that the Gemara needed.
Right. Well, I don't understand. Doesn't the blood come out by itself? I don't know why you need to push anything out.
Yeah, when you cut skin with a knife, the way that cuts is blood. But and still, the Gemara says more than is cut from the knife has to be drawn out to make sure that it seems that when somebody Shonen pointed it that just the knife touching the skin, I want more blood coming out than just what that causes.
Yeah, they know how to hurt it.
It's just a very little. If next time you're at a bris, just look at that. There's always.
I would recommend that, but
you've seen the tube, probably. You see the tube is there, and then there's blood inside it.
Yes. My question was, even before COVID, does everyone use a tube, or do some people do it without any involvement of the mouth at all?
Just I think it's almost, I know amongst the Orthodox, I don't know, it's a universally done with a tube.
Okay.
Was this some?
No, but you're saying now, but you're saying now, Rabbi, you actually don't have to do it.
Well, because there's you know, there's traditions, so some traditions stand firm through the test of time, but when some traditions stand in the way of sakana, so yeah. we look to
there's
the past to see which traditions have to fall aside for a year and a half, 2 years, and which traditions are are we going to have to?
But it's a kosher bris without it.
Of course, no denying, no question about the bris. And we say chamira sakanta me'isura, but this particular sakana can be obviated in some other way without putting the baby through the sakana of the breath of the moel, perhaps. Okay, of the asymptomatic moel. He doesn't know. He's not going to do the bris if he has symptoms, but he doesn't know he has either. Maybe every moel right before he does a bris should get tested. I don't know, but I'm just saying, that's what's out there. Okay, let me just quickly do. I see a trend here that I don't finish everything I plan to. Here it says, he says, "V'hine goy pasul lamul." Right, so a goy should not do bris mila. Fine, I get that. Look at the next paragraph after the beginning of the Yud Daled, where it says, "Ger milas atzmo." So near pasha de ger shaboli iskayer ena rashoy lamul ba'atzmo ki akate goyhu. Okay, but it just he discusses a very interesting concept that if a ger went to the mikveh first, right? Generally, we do the bris first, and then he goes to the mikveh some days later, right? But if he went to the mikveh first, the tchinuch suggests that he should be able to do the bris mila himself. Why? Because his Jewishness and the bris come together. You get it? Yeah. So all right, I'm not gonna, this is too remote, so I'm not going to necessarily pursue this to great extent. It says, Zmano, the bris must be done by the light of day, a bris done at night. So this is a machlokas in the Gemara. A bris done the night before the eighth day is, everybody agrees, has nidat tofas dam bris the next day. A bris done the night afterwards, this we did last week, if you recall, a bris done the night after, the night of the 10th, according to one opinion in the Gemara, is a kosher bris.
So the Sfardim do brises many times in the nighttime.
No. What they do is they have the bris right before Shkia, and they do the party at night. No one does a bris at night now. Maybe you're thinking of Pidgin or Ben, but I've seen these Sephardic brisin where they do it late in the day, right? I don't like that. I like there's reason Makdim in the mitzvahs. Avram did the bris early in the morning. It says Vayeshkeim because the child's an orel. I want to get rid of the orel, right?
It's Tzipora in the incident in the Torah. Tzipora does it. It talks about being at the Malone at night. Does she do the bris right there? Or the Pasuk doesn't put the bris in that moment.
So she was in danger. She had to be done, I'd say.
Yeah, the Pashto says that it was at night. That's the way Rashi and the Barbanel seem to read it.
Yeah.
Which is why Moshe came to the Sakana, because he was Osek B'Malone when he should have either been busy going to Egypt to save his brethren or not detract from his necessary mitzvah that he needed to do, which would appear to be something at night. So, I think that's the Pashtus, but it's before Matan Torah, so right. I really don't know what...
I'm not bringing it as a question or anything. I'm just asking.
Okay, So when a bris is done on when a bris is not bismano, so we all know that it's bismano, it's even docha Shabbos, it's even docha Yom Kippur, but if it's shalom bismano, then it's not even docha Yontif, right? It would be docha Chol HaMoed or Yerush Chodesh, of course. So that if a baby is born bein hashmoshos Friday afternoon, let's say this Friday afternoon Shabbos starts, lich benching is 5:35, And Bein HaShmashos, Shkia is 5:53. And according to the Gaonim, 13 and a half minutes later creates this twilight zone. So we're not sure if it's day or night. So let's say a baby was born at about, 6:05, 6:10, 6:07 this Friday night. So when do you do the bris?
Good question. If it's a suffix, you're not doing the Shabbos, right?
Right. So you can't do the bris on Friday, thinking maybe the baby was born on Friday. Maybe it's still daytime.
Right.
Because then it would be day seven.
She can't do it on Shabbos because maybe he was born on Friday and it's not Bismana.
And then it would be day nine.
Right.
So we have to do such a bris on Sunday. The family gets Sunday. Now, imagine if it's born on Bein HaShmashos, the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, and then Shabbos, you can have this baby boy getting his bris on day 12. You know, Alpidin. Right? Because he was born just the wrong time. Otherwise, he would have his bris on Rosh Hashanah, or he would have his bris on Erev Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so that's a mom refers to that. And
by the way, do they do a bris on Yom Kippur?
Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm.
There's a minhag. If the bris is done on Rosh Hashanah, there's a minhag to do the bris right at the time of Kia Shofar.
Wow. Is there something, I heard somewhere, maybe I'm confusing this with something, that if the bris is done on Yom Kippur, like the parents or something are allowed to not break their fast to have like a Seudas Mitzvah for it or something?
So what I would like to do is clarify that. But it's really quite curtailed. If it's a nidche tishabov in kal v'chomer a nidche shivasar b'tamuz, and double kal v'chomer if it's a nidche tamuz tester. Those are the only three fasts that can be not on their regular day of fasting.
Yeah.
A tishabov that falls on a Shabbos that's pushed to Sunday. So if the boy was born on the 3rd of Av and his bris is on that 10th of Av, on what we're fasting as Tisha B'Av, not Tisha B'Av, on that year, we're all eating on Tisha B'Av, because Tisha B'Av, the 9th of Av is Shabbos. So on such a day, the mother obviously eats. The mother has to eat on Yom Kippur if the baby's only 8 days old. She'd better eat. Right? But the chiddush is that on that fast, on that situation I just mentioned, while everyone else is fasting Tisha B'Av, and you know, half the fasts of Tisha B'Av fall on Shabbat, on Sunday. Mamish, half of them. It feels like more than half lately. Because Tisha B'Av can only fall on a Tuesday, a Thursday, a Shabbos, or a Sunday.
So Shabbos and Sunday are Sunday.
Shabbos and Sunday end up Sunday. So Tisha B'Av, half of Tisha B'Av is Sunday. Okay, so when that happens, when it's not the 9th of Av, not only does the mother get to eat because she just gave birth, but the father eats, the mole, I think, even possibly some of them, but the sandit can eat.
Well, don't you need a minion?
No, the priest doesn't need a minion.
But not on Yom Kippur?
No, Yom Kippur, Doris, no, I've not, I don't, that would be news to me, but I'm not familiar with such a thing.
Yeah, but Yom Kippur doesn't say you have to fast. It says you have to inflict yourself. So
yeah, but the Gemara derives from that. I mean, that's considered Doraisa. That the Gemara derives that it's b'shev al taseh, that you don't have to actually, you know, go do a positive affliction. Yeshayahu in the Torah in Perek Nun Ches speaks against such a thing. By the way, in the Dead Sea Scrolls, we see that is how they kept their Yom Kippur.
Right.
This is excellent.
Only the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash is the fasting on Yom Kippur.
Right. That's a Gemara Mod Katan with Shlomo Melech. The Karaites is an excellent book called by a man named Naftali Weider. It's called the Karaism and the Judean Scrolls, and he tries to show how the Karaite creeds and their approaches to things in the Torah is modeled after the same halachic philosophy of the ones who wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's a big, excellent. I enjoyed it very much, and it's I don't know if it's in the popular. You can find it in in his farm stores, but he makes the he has a whole chapter on Yom Kippur, and he makes the claim that what Robbie just mentioned is an inyan between those who accept Torah Shebaal Peh and those who reject Torah Shebaal Peh. Okay, Chevra, that's where we're starting to cover a little more inside, but next week we're going to be doing Gid HaNoshe. Gid HaNoshe is going to start the chinuch with, that he discusses many times, like Chatzi Shir and some other mitzvahs, Trichos Kavana, and Kavana in Lo Sasei, we have some fun, we'll have some... interesting minyan.
So next week it's only a half a shear?
No, it'll be a full shear.
You said Chatzi Shear.
Yes, but it's going to be the Chatzi Shear is still us in the Torah, so yeah. So we're gonna discuss that.
the sciatic nerve. That's what
Yes. Maybe I'll send out maybe some pictures of it. Okay, well,
that's because of Yaakov. That all started with Yaakov.
The story with Yaakov, and maybe next week, with your permission, since it's not a very big entry, the Sefer Achinuch upon which this Minchas Chinuch is based has quite an interesting Shoresh HaMitzvah. Don't forget, the book is also there to tell us why we keep these mitzvahs. Right, the Sefer Achinuch talks in the mitzvah Bris Mila of you know what all this does for you, for us, and maybe I'll start off with that next week just to connect. Okay, very good.
Thank you,
Zaka Baruch. Thank you.
Thank you.